Good morning. 7:44 in the morning on February 6th, a Monday. Whew. It's cold out here. It's 18 degrees. There's no wind, thank heaven. But it's cold. It's good to be out and walking early. I'm getting this out of the way. I'm going to go home. I'm going to upload this. And then I'm going to remember to hit publish. Because yesterday, as Anita Lewis reminded me, I neglected to do that. I had, you know, had it all ready to go. So I'm just sitting there cranking away on something else. And I get this text message from Twitter. What? Part of it is that I published two podcasts, so I got them confused. Which isn't really much of an excuse either, because I forgot to publish the other one as well. Anyway, moving right along. Some of you have seen the post from Robin on solarclipper.com. She responded to my thread and to the critics on that thread, explaining what she's been doing since August. So, with any luck, that means in the next day or so, I should be seeing some edits come from her. Not really. You know, if it happens, it happens. But I'm moving forward on my other projects. This is supposed to be a writing month. So far, I think this month I've written about 2,000 words, which is pretty pitiful. That's if you don't count the guest posts and blogs and stuff. I did finally get the story Bible outline from Scott Sigler, actually from A. Kovacs. Hit my inbox late last night. I've got it for this morning. I got a lot of reading to do first before I can start to write. So we'll see where that goes. It looks really good. I also owe him a signed contract for the story from the Crypt, which he sent to me while I was down in Colorado Springs, and which I have so far managed to forget to do anything about. Today's effort has been largely revolving around grading and students and classes. I missed grading last Monday because I was away. I typically grade on Monday morning, so we have an opportunity for people to get stuff in late before I start throwing zeros around. But because this week, every week has two grades, one for the early work, one for the late work, there's plenty of opportunity for people to lose points or gain points, depending on whether or not they just do what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it. And we're only in the fourth week, so we're trying to get them acclimated. Good morning. Oh, yay, a dog. Oh. So, yeah, let's see how this all flies. It's good to know that she has at least surfaced, that she is, in theory, working on getting DoubleShare ready to go to press. I don't know when that's going to be. And I've said to people, you know, I've kind of learned my lesson. I'm not going to predict when the books are going to be available. Now, for some people, this is just totally unreasonable. This is totally unacceptable. Well, why can you not know? And the answer is because the information that I have is chronically unreliable. And if I tell you and I'm burned by unreliable information, then you blame me for being unreliable. When the truth is, I've only ever said, this is the best data that I have. I'm sharing it with you on that basis. So yeah, and there was some interesting comments. I think I'm going to go back to Tony, and if I'm laying this inappropriately at Tony's door, then I apologize. Who did a really interesting breakdown of some of the edit changes between audio and text, and full share is probably one of the most egregiously munged up versions. people really don't understand that they're supposed to yield on a left-hand turn. And that the stop sign isn't a three-way stop. Quel amusant. Luckily, there was no crash that went along with that honk. Horn honk. My lips are freezing up. It's becoming difficult to talk. It's silly. Full share. Man, I don't know what the hell happened with that book. That was a mess. So looking at that as an example of what Ryden's editing has done or can do is probably not the best choice. And I'm going to take some of that heat myself because I didn't look deeply enough at the edits that were coming back. In some places, I look at it really closely. In other places, I just look to see what she changed. And if for some reason that didn't get flagged as a change, then I don't see it. And I'm not going to say that that was the case on Full Share. We were rushing Full Share to get it out because it was already late. This new book, Double Share, is so late now that another week, another three. If we put out a bad book, that would be really grim. So we do what we do. We punt on the rest. And I do still think, and I know that it seems incomprehensible, but I do still think that together we sell better books. Because they're better books, we sell more books than I could do on my own. I'm not sure that's true. And I'm fully aware that it's entirely possible that I'm wrong. The reality of it is I have such a rabid, strong fan base that maybe not. The other reality is that Quarter Share has had 5 years to build a fan base where the only sort of comparable work would be Ravenwood, which has only had a little more than a year, and is in a genre that is different from my main work. Now, Light in the Dark continues to sell very well. That's a self-pub at 99 cents, but it's not selling anywhere near the volume that the other books are selling. So I have to take that and keep that in mind. I have to take that in consideration. Which is probably way more than I needed to say on the subject, but it's cold and I'm rambling. So what else am I thinking about? I'm listening to this NPR piece on immigration, the Alabama law, and I'm struck by the brain deadness of it all. The guy who wrote the law actually lives in Kansas, and it's running immigration legislation is his hobby. This guy needs a life, I think. But his logic goes something along the lines of, in 9/11, and I hate it when we go back to that, but that's his logic, there was plenty of evidence that nobody paid attention to, notably that some number, and I forget whether it's 4 or 5, of the guys who were responsible for taking the planes up had traffic citations while they were in the U.S. illegally. So the reality is that if the police who had given them the citations had checked their immigration status, then we might have been able to prevent it. Now, that's a long reach. There's a couple of reasons. One, might have is a flag right away. There's no guarantee that we would have, that we're backups. Taking one person or two people or even four or five people out of the loop is not necessarily going to stop it. And checking immigration status for every routine traffic stop in the country. Yeah. What's happened in Alabama is that they've managed to arrest the heads of both the Mercedes and the Honda plant in Alabama. Because those people, in spite of the fact that they had perfectly valid documentation, did not carry the right documentation to satisfy the Alabama law. It's sufficient for them to fly. It's sufficient for them to have egress to the United States. They had passports, valid visas, work permits, but not the document that said that they were there legally according to the state of Alabama. So the police had to arrest them. Now, this goes back to, how can this be? Because when you think about what that means now, if you get stopped in Alabama and you don't have a birth certificate, you can be arrested. If you can't prove where you were born, you get arrested. So I'm sure that the Alabama State Patrol is asking Caucasian people this question. I'm really quite positive that people who speak with a southern accent get asked for their papers the same rate that people who are brown-skinned or have a foreign accent, like German or Russian, Chinese. And it just strikes me that these people don't seem to understand the concept of, if we lock everybody in jail, they'll be safe. It's not really the definition that I think the Founding Fathers intended when they started drafting a constitution. I don't know, it's a really interesting idea. Just because it's got gold bars and velvet walls doesn't make it less a jail. So I think there's some interesting times ahead. And I'm going to leave it at that. The immigration problem is one of those manufactured problems that really, it's a very hot button issue here in Colorado because of the number of Latinos and Hispanics who live here. But the reality is that the percentage of people who are in the United States illegally is no more now than it was in 1920. And yet, all of a sudden, it's a big deal. All of a sudden, it's a big issue. All of a sudden, we've got to send them back where they came from. Really? Alrighty then. And how do we do this? How do we enforce this? How do we engage the public in this debate? One of the things that struck me particularly was and I said I was going to shut up, but the senator, the state representative who sponsored the bill, said he wasn't happy with the current bill and he was working on tweaking it because there was a lot of stuff that got added at the last minute and things that were supposed to be in the bill got pulled out. So some of the protections that he had envisioned and some of the ideas that he was against got added to the bill over his objection. And he was placed in the position of either supporting the bill or voting against it and encouraging illegal immigration. Now that's as false a dichotomy as I have ever seen. We can't, of course, vote against the bill because it's harmful, that it has unintended consequences, that it is constructed poorly, that it has a lot of stuff in it that even the sponsor doesn't like. But we have to support it because that's the party line, and to not support it, and these were his exact words, encourages illegal immigration. Man. And it's everywhere. So now I'll shut up and stop talking about political stuff. But this kind of stuff is what I think about all the time. It's this kind of stuff that says, okay, what am I going to write about next? And while illegal immigration probably isn't going to make it into town at Fairport, some of the ideas that have been percolating through the podcast for the last few days, I think probably will. So, interesting. Ah, I made the turn. The sun is now up fully. It's shining on me. It feels quite nice. It's still cold, but at least the breath on my mustache is melting, where it had been frozen before. Really a clean, clear, lovely morning. A lot of the clouds have sort of burned away and moved off to the east. It's gorgeous. I hope I get a lot done today. I have a breakfast meeting at 8:30 and then therapy at 10. I've got to go down to Denver tomorrow and pick up the books from Cosine that I forgot to pick up when I was down leaving down there. And let's see what else. I've been invited to participate in Galaxy Fest, which is the last weekend of February, back down in Colorado Springs. And I'd really like to, but boy, this adds up fast in terms of gas money and hotel rooms and eating out. And frankly, I don't know if I can justify it from a business standpoint, being away again. Of course, the other side of it is that it's probably going to be largely many of the same people. And so con crud is going to be less a factor, in large part because I've already got their bugs. What else? Saturday evening I participated in the first roundtable podcast with Brian Humphrey and Dave Robison. Apparently it's the second episode. J. Daniel Sawyer did the first one last week. They're putting them in the can for the moment. They're going to start podcasting in March, so they're getting a few ahead to make sure that they have a solid schedule to roll out. And we did some work with a guy named Tristan Gravis. I mean, he had a really good idea. He had some really interesting, he had a whole pile of interesting ideas about what he wanted his story to be. And he'd run off the end of his plot, fall into a plot hole. And so he brought his story idea to the round table and we batted around some. Now, I think Dave leans more heavily toward shoot 'em up, because his first response was kill somebody. No, that's not fair. He was talking about adding some conflict. But I think the guy really has some interesting notions about what he's going to write and how he's going to write. And I think his biggest problem was that he bit off too big an arc to put in a single volume. Because he talked for close to 15 minutes and only got about a third of the way through his arc. And to me, that says, A, you either don't know what your book is, or B, you've bitten off too much. And I think if we gave him some advice, whether he follows it or not, I don't know. But it was fun to participate, to look at somebody else's story, to try to look at it through their eyes. How do they see it? And how can we suggest that perhaps they might be able to make it better? It was really it was really worthwhile. I hope I get to go back and do it again. I also hope to get some women to bring story ideas or to be guest hosts as well, because right at the moment it's a bunch of guys talking into microphones, and while there's some interest there, I think the perspective is also a bit gender biased. So with that, I'm at the back gate, and tomorrow is another day. I'll talk to you then.